It's Tony Mac and the Triplet with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplet, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins!
Touchdown Auburn!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are, Tony Mac and the Triplet.
Welcome in, everybody. Tony Mac and the Triplet. We are back after a two-week hiatus. Sorry, guys, I had to get married a couple weeks ago, which wiped me out the 28th, which was a pretty good weekend. That was the weekend that Ohio State had the miraculous comeback to beat Penn State by a point. TCU went down that week to Iowa State. Aaron and I kept up with these games. We were together there. He was part of my wedding. And then last week, I was on my way back from my honeymoon, where you had some of the big games. You had Bedlam. You had Ohio State going down to Iowa. Penn State dropping down to Michigan State. You basically had the Big Ten eliminate themselves outside of Wisconsin, leaving Wisconsin their only hope. You're seeing a playoff picture with three SEC teams trying to get in now. Got a lot to talk about. We even had football going on last night all over the place. You had Washington playing Stanford, and Stanford confirming that the Pac-12 is not going to make the playoffs either, because Washington now is a two-loss football team, one of the better defenses in the country. Got 30 put on them last night. Bryce Love, a Heisman hopeful, three touchdowns. And finally, Arky Shea and myself caught a little 4A Region 7 playoff football, where the Randolph Raiders went on the road to take on the Jacksonville Golden Eagles. Let me tell you something. The atmosphere of this game was fantastic. You get there, they have a great facility where the locker rooms are. The way their band came out was fantastic. It got you pumped up. I know it was the away team. I mean, I wasn't rooting for them, but I mean, it got you pumped up. It got you ready for the game. It was a pretty good atmosphere. You take the field. Randolph got the ball first to start the game. 69 yards in three plays they put on a touchdown. And you're thinking, here we go. Randolph ready to make a run. And then it was all Jacksonville after that. Jacksonville went on to win 43-13. Randolph couldn't stop them after the first couple of drives in the first quarter. It was a tough game. Really good effort, though. Randolph, they're coached with a lot of toughness by Coach Nick Flanagan, and they never gave up. They were down a bunch in the fourth quarter with 3 minutes to go. They called a timeout. They were acting as if with a minute to go, if they were able to score a touchdown here, that they have a chance to win the game. That's just the toughness they play with. They wanted a good note to go out with. 19 seniors, Aaron. 19 seniors on that football team that are done. But that's not the only bad news for Region 4A or 4A Region 7. They got swept out of the playoffs last night. Jacksonville was the 3 seed, I believe. They got knocked out by, or Randolph was, they got knocked out by Jacksonville. Hoax Bluff went into Madison Academy and won 12-10. And then Cherokee County went to Sardis, the team Sardis won Region 4, or 4A Region 7. And they beat Cherokee County, went into Sardis and won 21-14. And then undefeated Sachs took it to Westminster, 42-21. Westminster scoring a couple late to make it look a little more respectable. So there you have it. 4A Region 7 gone out of the playoffs. Pac-12 gone out of the playoffs. Big 10, if Wisconsin slips up because of their schedule, they're gone. So I'm going to bring my good buddy Aaron Triplett in here. Number one, it's just a hard thing to wrap your mind around. So number one, how are you this morning? It's good to be back, right, behind the microphone.
Yeah, I walked in this morning and I told you, God, it feels like it's been forever. And you were like, it has. It really has. It's been such a long time since I've been here. I had a day off at work yesterday because of the holiday. So coming in this morning, I was excited. I was excited to get back to it, because it's been a while. It really has been a while. Yesterday, I totally forgot to tweet out my poll for my team shirt of the week, but I obviously did not forget to wear one this morning. But what a week to be back! What a week to be back here in the studio with all these really good games going on today. We've got it's just a huge day, really one of those monumental days, and people who argue that the regular season in college football is incredibly important, they thrive on weeks like this. I'm not one of those people, but those individuals thrive on weeks like this because this is a huge week for a lot of teams, and a lot of seasons and dreams could end basically today with a lot of these ranked games.
And a lot of them already have, and that's really why this is an interesting week. Number one, you have seven top 25 teams going against another top 25 team, three top 10 matchups. And let me ask you something. I mean, how out of it are the Pac-12 done? I believe they're gone. Pac-12's done. If Wisconsin slips up to Iowa, are they done? Is the Big Ten done? Because you got an elimination game as far as the playoffs go in the Big 12. Oklahoma, TCU will take care of one another. And then if they meet again in the Big 12 championship, it's possible that they could wipe the Big 12 out, period, depending who wins that one. So who's left? Are we going to put the ACC and the SEC in there twice? Or are you going to throw the ACC in there three times and put the ACC in there once with Clemson or Notre Dame if they lose to Miami today and Miami's only loss is to Clemson? Do you put both of them in, or does the Big Ten jump right back in the picture? It's so wild to see right now. I don't think we've seen in the last few years. A lot of people are calling a more clear playoff picture, but to me, I don't think so because the dust hasn't settled yet. Sure, you think that the Big Ten's been eliminated. You think that the Pac-12's been eliminated, because I sure do think the Pac-12's been eliminated. But at the end of the day, you got three top 10 teams playing each other, and in reality, you can go through all the scenarios in your head. If Auburn beats Georgia, they're in it, or if this happens, they're in it. But yeah, how close are those games? How good do these teams look? You know what I mean? There's so many factors that go into it. There's no way it's as clear as people think it is.
It's not really that clear, but the one thing that is clear right now is the Pac-12 is done. The Pac-12 season is, if you're a fan of the Pac-12 or a Pac-12 team, your season is no longer relevant to the big picture. You're just playing to see who gets into the Fiesta Bowl, essentially. but for the rest of it, it's... We had one extremely cut and dry college football playoff season, and that was 2015. 2014 was iffy with TCU or Ohio State, but ultimately, because TCU did not have a championship game, they were left out, which made it somewhat cut and dry. And then you had last year, there was some controversy, but I believe that everybody kind of believed that Ohio State, where they had been ranked, and the fact that they had beaten Michigan previously, believed that they were going to be in.
That Ohio State game, or that Ohio State team from last year that you brought up, that's a good thing to keep in your memory. It's a good time to keep in your memory because there's possibilities that we could see something like that come into fruition again this season with Alabama possibly. I believe it would be Alabama more than it would be a Georgia team. But think about the end of the year. You think about these four teams you got right now. Notre Dame continues to win. Oklahoma continues to win. Clemson continues to win. You got Alabama and Georgia in the SEC title game. It's more likely that if I know everybody's saying, okay, if Alabama beats Georgia by a field goal, does that drop them to five and put Oklahoma, who would have beaten, or TCU, who would have beaten an Oklahoma or a TCU twice, do they get in? And I think because of last year, it depends on where you were last year, your stance of last year, and it depends on your perception of that program. How big of a program has that program been? And if it's Georgia that loses, I think they barely slip out. But think about it the other way. Georgia beats Alabama by a field goal in the SEC title game, and Oklahoma goes 12-1, beats a top 10 TCU team twice, has beaten Oklahoma State ranked 11, went into the Shoe, beat Ohio State. They've got a resume. Do they keep Alabama out? And you got it. Like I said, you've got to remember where you stood last year, and did you like how it turned out last year? And in my eyes, no way Alabama's out of the playoffs. It's just not going to happen.
I think that when you look at it, the job of this so-called committee, which if you ever heard me discuss it, I think it's worse than the BCS, arguably. Where we went was from the BCS was thinking outside but pressing right up against the box. So the actual their job is to put the four best teams in the playoff, regardless of who it is and what your conference championships and who you played, whatever. You got to put the four best teams in. And if Alabama beats Georgia by a last-second field goal, which is, I would say, is a feasible possibility. Alabama, I think, a couple weeks ago would have opened as a 7-point favorite over Georgia. But if they were to beat Georgia by a field goal or vice versa, but really Alabama beats Georgia by a field goal, could you really look Georgia in the eye at the end of the season? You went 12-0. You beat Notre Dame. You went to the SEC championship game and you lost to the number one team unanimously in the country by a field goal as time expired. Can you really look them in the eye and say, you're not one of the best four teams in the country?
I think because well, you look at the other side of it. I think because of where they've been the last few years and where Oklahoma's been the last few years, if Oklahoma were to go and smack TCU and smack them again, and then they beat Oklahoma State and they beat Ohio State, they've got those wins. And you look at Georgia, and you're like, it would depend a lot on what Auburn does. But if Auburn gets beat by Georgia today and then gets smacked by Alabama, that's not the best win in the world. It would be in Jordan Hare. And then you got the narrow win against Notre Dame. It would really depend on stacking up whose resume was better. But in the other case, if it was Alabama to lose, you would look and still, they would immediately say Alabama is one of the best four teams in the country, win or lose the SEC championship game, they're in. And here's my thing, and you touched on it, and it's perfect. You're talking about, we put this thing in place, and the college football fans wanted a playoff big time. And they gave it to us. They gave us a playoff. We put it in place because we were tired of the BCS. We were tired of the computer telling us who should play for a national championship game. Alabama went to a national championship. A team that didn't even win their division went to a championship game and won. And people still didn't like that because they said, well, they didn't earn it. You didn't win a conference championship. You didn't win a division. You didn't earn your way there. But you went there and won, so that's irrelevant. There's a lot of arguments there. But people didn't want to see that happen again. That's why we get the playoff. Well, you didn't want to see a team that didn't even win their division in the playoff. Well, guess what? You got one last year. And now you might see a team again 2 years in a row who didn't win a conference, whether it be Alabama, whether it be Georgia. There's a big possibility that they're in the playoff. You've got to expand this thing to eliminate that. Now, I know the playoff committee thinks that this is awesome because of the controversy it gets every week and people are into it. They're being talked about. That's the thing about being popular. It doesn't matter if it's good publicity or bad publicity. It's publicity because you're being talked about. You're getting the ratings. People want to see what you're going to do, whether they think you're crazy out of your mind or you're getting it right. That's where they think they got this thing right. But they couldn't be more wrong. It's not good. You got five. The problem is your math is wrong. You got five Power Five conferences that you've considered five better conferences than any other conference in football, and you only got four playoff spots. That's where you start if you're going to fix this thing.
And people forget, and you touched on it. Like if Alabama beats Georgia by a field goal and they drop Georgia to five from 1-5, people forget. When LSU beat Alabama by a field goal in that regular season game, Alabama went from 2-3. That's where they dropped. And people's like, oh, we don't want computers deciding. And here's my thing. You went from a poll, the BCS, which was a combination of the Harris poll, because the AP poll decided they didn't want the BCS to use their poll, but it was the Harris poll, the coaches poll, and some simulated computers. So that was two human polls and some computer averages, all factored in together with this algorithm and math and running numbers and stuff to decide, give you a percentage out of 100, who was, or out of one, because it was, if you were number one in the country, you were one. You had a perfect one. And if you were number two, it was like 0.98 something. And depending on how well you did going further back. And now you're saying, and I brought this up before, you want 12 people? 12 individual persons with 12 different opinions, 12 different views to decide who gets in. And I don't like either of them, but as a whole, I think I would prefer the other way. Just take the BCS and let the BCS decide the four teams.
Or eight teams or what
eight,
have you.
And I don't like the way they do. Because another thing is, what if, let's just say Alabama and Georgia both get in, which I think they will if they continue to win and they continue and the game is close. And if Notre Dame wins out, Notre Dame's in. There's one conference out of three teams because Notre Dame is independent. So now you got four other conferences playing for one spot. There's going to be three three conferences playing for one spot because the Pac-12's done.
And Notre Dame right now, they're a team that needs bigger wins than anybody because they don't have a conference that they're in. They don't have a conference championship. And people brought up – someone brought up wrongly the other day that Oklahoma didn't play in a Big 12 championship game in 15 and got in. Yeah, you're right about that, but they won their conference. And what that meant was they played every team in their conference, and they were the best one. They came out on top. So they still won a conference championship. Notre Dame doesn't have that. And that's what TCU had a couple years ago because they didn't have a conference championship game and they didn't win their conference outright. They split it with Baylor. So they won a share of a Big 12 championship. So TCU, kind of in the same, but you got to look at Notre Dame the same way you do TCU. That last week, does another team prove themselves better than Notre Dame? Notre Dame still got to go beat Miami. That's where they're in trouble. But something, I want to get back to the playoff thing you were talking about there. And I'd much rather have the playoff without the committee, you know, whether the computers decided or whatever. And I get that. The computers have unbiased numbers, but a lot of people disagree with the numbers. That's fine. It's not a perfect system. We're not going to have a perfect system. With the playoff system could be perfect, but you're never going to have – nobody's going to be perfectly happy with the way you decide it. And
there's always going to be problems with the way it's decided. Right. Nobody's going to be happy. There's not a perfect way to do things, but there are ways to do things that are much better than this.
Yeah.
But like my – the ideal system is have – the conference, every conference have a championship game, have a conference championship week.
And Notre Dame's got to get in the conference.
They would essentially have to, unless you have you would have automatic bids for the five conference champions, and then you have three at large spots. And if you're Notre Dame, you'd have to win out to get one of those, essentially, or go 11-1, and you might get one of those spots. You could, in theory, have a non-Power 5 team, so that would give the group of fives a little bit more to play for. If you were to go unbeaten and beat a team of, you know, substance, like if Houston had won out last year after beating Oklahoma in week one, they could have been one of those other teams. And then a team who maybe slipped up and didn't make the conference championship game or whatever. And then you make those conference championship – well, people will say, well, if you make the conference championship games automatic bids and you're going to end up with some 8-4 team getting into a championship and beating an unbeaten team, that's awesome.
That's
awesome. That gives them everything to play for. It doesn't mean – like, it makes the games where Alabama played Florida – or when Alabama played Florida,
you know,
and Florida was so bad, they gave Florida, number 17, something more to play for than just upsetting Alabama.
You know what that argument tells me? We don't want parity in college football.
And there is limited parity as it is. So let's, like...
I think parity's coming up a little more. There,
it
there's
is
a little more parity
showing
than
a little bit this year.
But back to what I was trying to say is that you got, in the BCS, you had the unbiased numbers, but people disagreed with the numbers they were using. Well, in the playoff, you have human beings deciding things based on brand recognition. Is that not just as bad? Because whether it be Georgia losing to Alabama and Oklahoma or TCU jumping them, or the other way around, Alabama losing and Oklahoma still not being able to jump in, it's based on brand recognition. Oklahoma and Georgia are both good programs, and they're definitely recognizable, but Oklahoma's been better lately. So that's why I think they would probably get in just over Georgia. And on the other side, Bama's obviously been way better than Oklahoma in the public eye over the past few years, so they would get the benefit of the doubt in the committee's eyes. That's just as bad as the numbers that people don't like. I mean, that's just as bad as a computer deciding it. But because you're saying they're using unbiased numbers, but those numbers might not tell the whole story, this and that, or they're weighing too much on a certain number. Well, that's what the committee's essentially doing with brand recognition.
And it's going to be and speaking of, you know, we're going. I think that a good way to describe it is if you were to make a political cartoon of the college football playoff committee, you would have the college football playoff committee tied to some puppet strings, and up at the top behind the scenes, you would have the ESPN people puppeting the college football playoff. Because I just don't see how someone in their like right insane mind doesn't think that ESPN – with all the rights they have to college football, which they milk it. They milk, and they love the fact that they have all the rights to college football because they barely have any rights to the NFL. But they milk it for all it's worth, and then they take this, and they're the ones that – I mean, in my opinion, Alabama did nothing to warrant being ranked number two in the country. But, yeah, Georgia has the one better win against Notre Dame, and Alabama hasn't played anybody. But nothing warranted that. That was for discussion. I think that was mainly for discussion to stir something up because there was going to be no controversy with 1 and 2. So they're like, hey, y'all switch these so we can get some more discussion. I'm like, and I know that, that probably that there's I think that there's something, there has to be some kind of connection. Maybe not as big as I probably think it is, but I think there's something, they have something to do with, you know, influencing this, because you're right. They want to get the teams in that are going to draw the big audiences.
Yeah.
Because that's what they're shooting for. And of course, in my opinion, if you expand to 8 teams, what more could you ask for? I feel like the ratings would shoot way up if you went with something like that.
All right. Well, it's a good point. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk about some of these big games we got coming up today. There's a lot of them. We'll set the scene for a few of them. Talk about a little football that happened last night and what that means for the Heisman Trophy picture, as well as the playoff picture. That's all coming up right here on Tony Mack and the Triplets Sports Radio, 730, 103.9 The Ump. Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplet on this gorgeous, a little chilly Saturday this morning, but you couldn't ask for anything better. I like the chill. We've had too much hot. It's November. It's time to be a little bit chilly. I got all the warmth I needed on my honeymoon. It was 77 and sunny all week long. I'm good now.
Well, you should have, because on your wedding it was about, you know, an ice storm outside. It was so cold. I know that y'all wanted to have it outside, and it would have been, but it really wasn't a nice day.
I was 100% relieved that we were
and
inside.
It was so cold.
Absolutely relieved.
Because we saw that other wedding was taking place on the balcony under where you guys would have had yours, and they looked miserable out there. We were out there watching them.
Well, they might have looked miserable because one of my wife's bridesmaids accidentally flashed the whole wedding party down there, so that could be part of the reason that they looked miserable, but that's a story for another time. All right, back to what everybody cares about, back to college football, because we are in the thick of things. Enjoy this week. We were just talking off the air. You absolutely need to enjoy and soak in this week of football. Pay attention to other teams you don't pay attention to, because guess what? Next week sucks. Next week is going to suck. Alabama's going to play Mercer. Auburn's going to play Louisiana Monroe, and the SEC's having their cupcake week.
Yeah, cue the cupcake week segment on game day next week, because that's what it is.
Oklahoma, like your big teams, Oklahoma's got Kansas. Wisconsin has Michigan. That's the interesting game with an interesting team. Let's jump into that a little bit, Aaron. Wisconsin, you said something off air that I disagreed with, but maybe a couple other people will join your belief here. You said that you felt like Auburn, a two-loss Auburn team, has a better chance of making the playoffs than an undefeated Wisconsin team, which I think you were a little harsh on purpose. I disagree, but I know what you mean. I mean, Auburn's got a big schedule ahead of them, and at least to some degree, people believe they can start it by winning today. Some people believe they can win today. Wisconsin, a lot of people are crapping all over their schedule, their strength of schedule. They're about to get into some decent games. And I don't think anybody's given them any bit of a chance.
Well, Wisconsin is kind of Iowa a couple years ago, when unbeaten regular season, they avoided Michigan and Ohio State on the and Michigan State for that matter in their schedule that season, ran the table, ended up playing Michigan State in the Big Ten Championship, played them down to the wire and got beat. But of course, everybody knows that was only, they were playing for a right to get blown out by Alabama in a semifinal, but Wisconsin is this year's Iowa. They don't play anybody. Their out-of-conference schedule is awful. Utah State, Florida Atlantic, and BYU. And they were like, oh, I can't blame them for BYU. They schedule these games years in advance. I don't care. That's not a great out-of-conference game to schedule anyway.
I'm with you. They remind me of the 2015 Iowa team, but also if they end up with a loss and win the Big Ten Championship anyway and are talking about getting in, that's last year's Washington team as well. And my big question here is, for those of you who saw Washington play Alabama last year, you knew realistically they didn't have a chance in that game. Do you want to see Wisconsin get in? And for those of you who have seen the Big Ten in the playoffs the last 2 years not score points, Ohio State, Michigan State, not score a point in the playoff, do you want to see Wisconsin get in? I mean, it's great for your conference, but to see them get in, but they're going to get smacked. And trust me, folks, I'm the same way with Oklahoma right now. I would love to see Baker Mayfield make a run and get into the playoffs in his senior year. Realistically, because of the defense, do I think they have a chance to win a football game in the playoff, depending on who they play? Maybe, but if they squeeze in at the four seed, which it's likely they will, they'll have to play a Georgia or Alabama. If they have to play Alabama, no. I mean, do I think they can score points on them? Sure, because that offense, people undervalue how good that offense is, but Alabama will run absolutely buck wild on them. So as a fan of a specific team, yeah, I'd love to see my team get in. I mean, it's just good to see them get into the playoffs. But as a fan of wanting the conference of the Big 12, the perception of that conference to look better, that's tough. And if you're a Big 10 fan and not a Wisconsin fan, you're saying, please don't put Wisconsin in. I think it'd be worse. If the Big 10 doesn't get in, for me personally, I think it's better for the perception of the conference if they don't get in rather than getting Wisconsin put in and getting beat like a drum 3 years in a row, 3 out of 4 years, because you have a national championship in your conference, but then the next 3 years, possibly if Wisconsin gets in, you get smacked.
And I say that Auburn has a better chance of Wisconsin of getting in at this point, partially because of bias, but partially because Auburn's got almost their entire schedule and the only games they need to win right in front of them. They're going to play Georgia. They play Georgia today. They play Alabama in 2 weeks, and then they'll play Georgia again. And assuming that Georgia finishes out their season strong and beats a cupcake and beats Georgia Tech, Georgia's going to be 11-1 going into that game, and they're playing to get into the top. Because if Georgia, even if they lose this weekend and they win the SEC championship game, I think Georgia's still in, obviously, with only one loss and to Auburn, and a win in the SEC championship game against whoever it may be. I think they're in, and you know the interesting thing, really and truly, is if Auburn wins this weekend and they beat Alabama in 2 weeks. Alabama's sitting there at 11-1 and not having to play in an SEC championship game, but their only loss being to Auburn. If Auburn goes on to win the SEC championship game, do you look at Alabama and say, you're not one of the best four teams in college football, you're not playing an SEC championship game, but your only loss is to Auburn? This has the potential to be the craziest end to a college football season for this committee and playoff that we've seen since its inception.
Well, I think things get really muddied up in that situation. You say if Auburn beats Alabama in a couple weeks and goes to the SEC championship, that means Auburn would have to beat Georgia this week because Auburn can't afford to lose another SEC game. So that means that Alabama would be a one-loss team without winning their division, which we've seen that happen before Ohio State. But on the other side of things, Auburn would win the SEC, get in. And then Georgia would be a two-loss, you know, SEC East division winner with two losses to the same team. So it would be really confusing. You would have split opinions about Georgia, split opinions about Notre Dame, split opinions about Alabama in that situation. And I think it'd be a lot tougher for them to get in that situation.
And I think that if something like that happens, but I just don't see that Wisconsin, even if they run the table, getting in over any of those three SEC teams. I just, it's too.
I do. I think
they would have. I think they would have to blow out whoever they played in the Big Ten championship game, which Wisconsin, they've got some double digit wins, but they don't have any really impressive looking wins. And I mean, their toughest games, we just talked about it, their toughest games all season are today and next week. They play Michigan, who can't play offense.
The conference that was left out last year was the Big 12, and it was a Oklahoma team who ran through the Big 12. They went undefeated, but they lost two games. They lost to Houston, and they lost to Ohio State badly. I don't think you're going to see a conference. And then you see how the Big 10's been valued. They've been in every playoff, I think. And then you've got last year, Ohio State squeezes in when they didn't even win their division. If you have an undefeated 13-0 conference champion in a Power 5 conference, they're getting in. I think that's going to be absolutely impossible.
I think you're right.
Think about where they're ranked right now. That's going to be the crazy thing, because if they keep Wisconsin at 8 and then they get to the Big Ten championship, going into the Big Ten championship game, even if they're ranked 6th, they're going to jump at least 2 or 3 programs to get into the playoff, and that's going to be where the controversy is. I have no problem with Wisconsin getting in. My thing is, is jumping them last minute over that many teams. And we've seen it happen before. We've seen TCU do nothing but win by a high margin and then get dropped last minute to a conference champion in Ohio State in another Big Ten team. So I think a 13-0 conference champion is in regardless. Now, it sucks for the other teams that get dropped, and I think Notre Dame is being put on notice in that situation because, one, they're not undefeated, and number two, they don't have a conference championship game. So in Wisconsin's case, I think if any team is in trouble, if Wisconsin runs the table, it's Notre Dame.
I think this is the only ranked team that Wisconsin's going to play up until the Big Ten championship game.
Depending on where Michigan is,
which Michigan is unranked at this point.
How awesome would it be to see PJ Fleck pull off an upset last week of the season, Minnesota?
That would be pretty awesome. Simply because teams like Wisconsin, I just don't particularly respect. They just don't play nobody, and which sounds hypocritical of me. If you heard me 2 years ago cheering for Iowa,
I was just about to say, don't you dare! You were the biggest Iowa Hawkeyes advocate. And it was the worst thing to listen to.
It was. Me and my brother got on this, for some reason, this Iowa like bandwagon. And for some reason, we were cheering on Iowa every week. We knew that they were terrible. But we were loving every minute of it. And I don't know why. But
if you're a team with a bunch of gritty white guys that just play with a bunch of grit instead of necessarily talent, and you don't play for the New England Patriots, then Aaron Triplett is bound to love you as a team.
But I don't feel that way about Wisconsin, because it's like the same thing. I actually wish Wisconsin would lose because I'm tired of them. But I don't know. Maybe it's just because I don't like Wisconsin. I just get tired. I just get sick of seeing them up there. But it's going to be a wild finish, because it's one of those things where you have those three teams in the SEC, and this is all. In retrospect, because Auburn's got to go out there and win today, and then you're throwing all this hope into this Auburn fan base on making all this talk, and then you remember Gus Malzahn is our head coach. But besides the fact, can you really look at if Auburn runs the table and wins the SEC championship and Alabama's 11-1, can you look at Alabama or can you look at Wisconsin as the committee, an undefeated 13-0 Wisconsin team, and say you're better than Alabama?
Well, let's get into some of that right now. Let's talk about if teams run the table. Let's see if they're going to. Let's see if we even think that's going to happen. I mean, we're not going to make our picks just yet, but we can talk about some of these big games coming up this week and a bunch of big situations. And it's not necessarily a big game as far as playoff implications go, but certainly as far as firing a coach right away, you got Tennessee going to Columbia to take on Missouri. And now they're saying that Garantano, he's still a game-time decision for today. What that means is freshman quarterback Will McBride might get his first official start at Tennessee. He came in and played the majority of that game early. I think he started early in the second quarter, and he played the majority of Tennessee's game last weekend. But Aaron, this doesn't help, because already I thought TCU was going to get smacked by Missouri after what Missouri did to Florida last week. I know a lot of Tennessee fans are still wondering, is this the game? It's been the question since Alabama. Is this the game that gets him fired? Is this the game that gets him fired? Still, I don't think so. I think that Butch Jones, Lyle Jones, is going to be your head coach until the end of the football season. And mainly, I think that's because his buyout, I think, goes down $100,000 like every game he plays. I think it's something like that the rest of this season. So the big question for me is, how hard does this continue to hurt your recruiting? Because not only, in my eyes, they're basically saying Butch Jones is done after this season. We just need to hold on to him to save a little money. But they're not spelling that. They're not out there saying those exact words. They're not telling people, hey guys, don't worry, Butch Jones won't be our head coach next year. There's a lot of uncertainty with who's going to be the head coach. Is it going to be Butch? Is it going to be Gruden? Who is it going to be? I want to know, because I committed to this football team. And you know why this is potentially hurting recruiting even more? That early signing period. A lot of these guys want to go ahead and get enrolled, and they want to get on campus. And that early signing period allows them to do that, and that's in December. And that puts a lot of pressure on Tennessee. Like, they got to get this thing figured out and let people know, hey, this guy's going to be our coach next year, or we're going to go with this guy. This is the direction we're going to try to go. Because as of right now, they're not in a good spot. You got guys all over Tennessee's recruiting trail reopening their recruiting, And then you just had Cade Mays, the number 19 overall prospect. I think he was like the number two offensive lineman in the country, who goes to a school 10 miles. He attends a Catholic high school 10 miles from the Tennessee campus. Decommitted. I think a lot of that has to do with this early signing period and the indecisiveness of what Tennessee is going to do with Butch Jones. Like I said, I think Tennessee's saying, yeah, he's not our guy after this year. We're trying to save money. But they haven't come out and said that. They're doing a bad job here with recruiting. And as of right now, not setting up the next guy with a lot of great confidence, which tells me it might not be somebody like Gruden. I mean, Gruden wants to come into a good situation if you're somebody like John Gruden, because it's a guy who hasn't been coaching for a long time. And there's been a lot of buildup coming up for John Gruden because he's been in the rumor mill for teams over the past, 10 years. He's been in the rumor mill for a long time.
John Gruden is always in the conversation for the Tennessee head coach, just like Jimbo Fisher is on everybody's watch list for some reason. Jimbo Fisher, and on Auburn's it's always Jimbo Fisher and Bob Stoops. It doesn't make any sense.
My point is there's a lot of buildup for him, so he wants to come into a good situation and have success right away. He doesn't want to have to rebuild something, and he doesn't want to have that supposed letdown of Gruden wasn't worth it. So Tennessee's got to do a better job. They have a lot of trouble from the head coach in the locker room all the way up to the front office. So good luck, Tennessee. I think you get smacked by Missouri today. And honestly, I think Tennessee fans hope they do, because that's another step of getting Butch out right away.
Yeah, and Missouri did the same. Missouri's going to do what they did to Florida last week to Tennessee. And on mentioning Florida real quick, I'm going to go ahead and take credit, because I haven't been able to take credit for it yet. But and I've been dying to bring this up. 3 years ago, on December about the 4th, whenever Jim McElwain was hired by Florida, I tweeted immediately, and I took a screenshot. I scrolled back all the way through my tweets the other day, and I screenshotted it, and I tweeted it once McElwain was officially out. I said, I give McElwain 3 years tops, and I look like a genius. And I was so it's so funny, because these people are football coaches are human beings. But there are people out there that want people to lose jobs and have to move and relocate their families so badly. Just to be right, or just to because your team is terrible. But I wanted him fired so bad because I wanted to be right, and I look like a genius.
Yeah,
3 years tops.
You absolutely were right about that. And Florida is just a whirlwind of disaster. You don't know who's going to be their head coach. I can tell you who it's not going to be. It's not going to be Randy Shannon. Because you get one shot as an interim to go out there and re-energize.
And his track record at Miami wasn't very good either.
No. You got a chance to go out there and re-energize these guys and get them turned around as an interim head coach, and you lay a goose egg to Missouri. Missouri absolutely lit you guys on fire.
And the crazy thing about Florida and Tennessee is that Missouri is a terrible football team. Missouri is absolutely awful. I picked them to finish last in the West the East for a reason, and they're awful.
See, that's about the only thing I'm hanging my hat on as well, because my SEC East standings are garbage because of the preseason the voting we did, and the only thing I'm hanging my hat on that I might get right is Vandy finishing last. So.
And I mean, and I wanted to pick Georgia preseason to win it, but I just thought that Georgia was going to pull another Georgia and, lose to somebody they shouldn't lose to, beat Florida, but Florida somehow still ending up in it. But Georgia turned out to be a completely different team, and Florida, of course, definitely a different team. But yeah, Florida and Tennessee are just dumpster fires.
All right, before we jump into these big games we got coming up today, we got to talk about – well, this is a good transition into that. A friend of mine tweeting a game day sign or sending us a tweet of a game day sign. How tired are you of hearing the whole Rudy was offsides thing? This is getting – so this is the one reason I was kind of upset that Notre Dame was going to game day, because, you've had some good signs in the past. But, my goodness, leave the Rudy thing alone. It's overplayed.
Yeah. The Rudy is a great story. But college game day signs in general, in my opinion, are getting old to me.
Not me. I love the creativity. There's still a lot of creativity.
And
there
are a lot of good ones, but there are a lot of ones that are so stupid. And and you turn on game day and all you see is signs. You can barely see people anymore. Everybody's trying to make a sign that gets seen. Because I remember several years ago was when the signs were in their heyday, when there wasn't an overly ton of them, but there was still a good bit. And they were each clever in their own way. But now it's just, it's a pandemic. Everybody has a sign. Everybody, like...
I love it.
I think it's stupid. I think the signs are overdone. But when you see one that's really good, like one that I'm sick of is so-and-so's coach listens to Nickelback. Oh, my gosh. Like, think of something new. Does your life suck that bad for you to put that on a sign?
I'm with you. I know there's a lot of repeat signs, but it doesn't mean I hate the signs. There's at least one original one every week that I look at. I'm like, that's good.
I can agree with you on that. There's about one every week that's original. The Rudy one? No,
that's not original.
That's like the Nickelback sign.
Right.
Like, find something different with your life. But, like, of course. Oh, and then there was the ones that were, for example, JT Barrett, more like JT Carrot. Like, what? Or Ohio State, more like Ohio Bad. That was the worst one I saw, because then you had Louisville, more like Pooeyville or something like that. Like, those are terrible.
Best one I've seen so far this year, it was Trace McSorley can't hit dingers. That was fantastic.
Well, it's because y'all love the word dinger.
It's the most bro word in all the sports. You don't get any more bro than, yeah, man, look, he's out there hitting dingers, bro. Dude rakes. It's fantastic. I love it. And then you had... what's his face in the World Series?
Springer dingers. Every time I saw that worded text, I wanted to punch you guys, because it was you and one of our other good buddies, and he played baseball all through high school and loves baseball. So so y'all went back and forth on the dingers and the going yard and the rakes and all that crap. Goodness,
Aaron Judge, man, dude hits dingers.
I did like Aaron Judge, and what he did during the playoffs was exciting, but I got so tired of the word dinger.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll break down the last part of this hour. We'll set you up for all the big games you got coming up. There's seven games featuring top 25 teams against another top 25 team, three of them in the top 10. We'll get to all that just shortly right here on Tony Mack and the Triplets, Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump. Triplet here on a beautiful Saturday morning, a sack up Saturday, pretty much. You just got to grow a pair and go out here and win a football game this weekend, because everybody's bringing their A game this week. Some guys who didn't bring their A game usually make it into our list of crying Jordan faces of the week. That's because they've done something stupid. They are the dumbest of the dumb, and instead of just talking about it, we got to get with the cultural trend here. We've got to slap a crying Jordan face on him and tweet it out, because that's what we do, and adds a little extra humiliation. So let's get to it, Aaron. Here we have just a few minutes before we got to get out of here. It's time for the dumbest of the dumb, the idiot of the week. It's our crying Jordan faces of the week. I will start, if you don't mind. I've got to go with none other than LiAngelo Ball, because he's ball number two. If you want to call him that, he's Lonzo Ball's little brother. He's at UCLA. They're in China. They were in China. They were getting ready to play Georgia Tech for their first game of the season. And him and two other buddies walk into a Louis Vuitton store, and they are busted with shoplifting. Now they're stuck in China. They're essentially on house arrest at their hotel for a couple of weeks until this thing gets situated. Bad job by LiAngelo Ball. You're a moron. Aaron, crying Jordan face of the week. You got about 3 minutes to explain it, and it might take a little longer, but please.
Long story short, for those of you who know, a couple weeks ago, I gave our good buddy Tyler Howe real hell for losing a fantasy football game to one of our buddies, Vish, and I gave him hell for last year's game, too, against the same guy. But this year, there's a guy in our league that never checks his lineup. And if you get him midseason, he's probably going to have everybody on a bye, and you're probably going to kill him. So I come up against this guy. He's 0-7 a couple weeks ago. 0-7. and his team name is Yes, 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 just repeated the word yes over and over and over again. And I'm like, and of course he had nobody playing. He had everybody playing except one. And I'm like, he's about to beat me. And lo and behold, he came out and beat me. Jameson Crowder, thank you very much for going off for about 25 points.
And it was beautiful.
They and all my good buddies, they loved every minute of it.
They loved every minute of it because you live and die by fantasy football, number one. And number two, you crack on people. You have this passive-aggressive way on cracking on people for losing a game, and it really gets under everybody's skin. And then you go.
I'm the villain.
Fantasy football, for sure.
You go out there and you veto trades that shouldn't be vetoed, and then you turn around wanting something very similar to go your way, and it doesn't. So you're absolutely the villain. You're kind of sleazy and douchey in fantasy football. So you got what was coming to you, and hopefully you're gonna get what's coming to you this weekend too, because you got me suiting up against you
now.
This week.
Now, yes, 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 sitting there at 1-7 with the only win over me. I'm hoping that he can grab his second win against our buddy Jordan, which he doesn't have anybody on by, so maybe he will. But my crying Jordan face of the week is myself for that loss with the guy from WWE screaming yes combined on the picture. So all of our good friends will find that extremely funny.
In the middle, when I got back from my honeymoon, I actually I made a collage.
I thought about using that collage actually, because it was pretty good. But that was yours. I needed to add something with the yes, yes, yes
and
guy.
Also,
but
also, I don't know understand the infatuation, but Aaron's way he goes in fantasy football is he names his teams after Pokemon, and one of them is an Onyx. So I took an Onyx and I slapped a crying Jordan face on there and sent it to
him. Yeah, the Crystal Onyx picture, because my team name is Kingdom of the Crystal Onyx.
I've been trolling him since this happened. So it's don't worry, guys. I've been on it since the beginning. We're going to have to be out of here just momentarily because the music's about to kick in. But don't worry. We got a lot more football coming for you. See, there it is now. We got a lot more football coming up for you at the top of the hour. We got one more hour to break down Sack Up Saturday before we actually lace them up and get out there. Well, not me. I'm going to be driving home for the first part of the 11 o'clock games. But there will be football being played, and we're going to talk about it and make our picks coming up in the next hour. Tony Mack and the Triplets, Sports Radio, 730, 1039, The Ump.
It's Tony Mack and the Triplets with your host, Antonio McBeth. And Aaron Triplett, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins! Touchdown Auburn!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach! The good talent wants to play for him!
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are. Tony Mack and the Triplett.
Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplet, 10 o'clock on the dot on this beautiful Sack Up Saturday is what I'm going to call it, because that's absolutely what you got to do. You got to grow a pair and go out there and play a big game, because all we can do in the media is talk about it. We can talk about all these big games all we want to that we have going on this weekend. At the end of the day, we can speculate about who's going to win what and what the playoff picture is going to look like, but it could be totally different. All these teams could go out here and lose and make everything look totally different. That's why you got to lace them up. You got to sack up, grow a pair. Go out there and play these football games. Aaron, you and I are not going to play the football games. We're going to do the exact opposite. We're going to sit here and speculate them. So we're going to start with Michigan State. Huge win last week. Huge win last week, upsetting Penn State. And then on the other side of the spectrum here, they're going to the Shoe to take on Ohio State, who got smacked by Iowa. What are the keys to this game here? Because for me, it's Michigan State has to continue with good offense, because after Iowa laid down 50-plus on Ohio State last week, you got to think they're going to be recharged for this game.
You would think, and Ohio State's got to respond, but of course Ohio State now at this point doesn't have that much to play for, because if they win out and win the Big Ten, the only thing they can really hope for is the only thing they get is a New Year's Six Bowl. I think the Orange Bowl, maybe. The Cotton Bowl. But either way, they don't have much to play for. But Michigan State, but being at home, Michigan State going on the road, it's going to be tough. Michigan State and Ohio State both better at home than they are, much better at home than they are on the road. So that's, I think that's going to play a factor. And, I mean, Ohio State's 17-point favorites at this point. 17. That's they're number 13 over the number 12-ranked team favored by 17.
I don't think it really matters what happened to Penn State last week, how it happened, I should say, because of the whole weather delay. There's like a three-hour weather delay. That game was an 11 o'clock game that finished up with the afternoon games because there was a three-hour delay. I think the total runtime for that game was over 7 hours. And that had a lot to when you're the away team, that has a lot to do with it, because when you're at home, you got the facilities back there for you. You've got food. You're catered. The away team, not necessarily, and Michigan State was able to come out and squeak that one out. The only way that one's important for Michigan State was the momentum they gained going forward. Brian Lewerke, the quarterback for Michigan State, passed for over 400 yards last week against Penn State and did it the week before that as well. He is back-to-back. He's accounted for 800 yards in 2 weeks. So he is a big key going forward, as we've seen two quarterbacks be very successful so far against Ohio State. Baker Mayfield had great success. Iowa's quarterback a week ago had fantastic success. They just weren't able to bring him down. Nick Bosa, I believe, was the one ejected for targeting early in that game. He's going to be back, I'm assuming, and I'm assuming he's going to be back with vengeance. So, Aaron, let's go ahead and start by making our first pick of this week. Who you got? You got Michigan State on the road taking on the Buckeyes. Who's going to win?
I think it's going to be a close game, at least for a half. But I think Ohio State, they're just more talented. I think they're going to come out hungry, kind of want to respond to prove they still got something left in the tank after the beating they took last week. So I'm going to take Ohio State at home is a big part of that. And I think JT Barrett's going to have to play well, but I think he comes out and responds to try to put a cap on his senior year. So I think Ohio State gets this done just because I don't think that – Michigan State's going to have the horses on offense, at least, to score enough points in this game. Because if they struggled anywhere, it is struggling to score points this year. But they've had some games where they put up some good ones, and they end up squeaking out enough last week. But I think Ohio State's going to end up being too much. Pull away late in the second half.
Initially, I thought the same thing about Michigan State's offense. And, you know, we're going to get the typical run the majority of the game and try to make your quarterback throw when he needs to. Don't try to make him do more than he has to do. He doesn't need to be more than a game manager. That seems to be the trend for D'Antonio with his quarterbacks. But the last few weeks, Brian Lewerke's looked very, very good. So the key for me for Michigan State is you got to go out there and you got to stick with the scoring early. You got to score on them early and put the pressure on Ohio State, because I think Ohio State's going to come out and jump on them early. They're going to come out and score the first couple two out of their first three possessions probably. So if you're Michigan State, you got to keep the pressure up if you want to win this football game. You got to go score to score with them early in the game and let your defense grind it out late. But don't think that's going to happen. I think if they want a chance to win, that's how it's got to happen. Brian Lewerke's got to be as amazing as he has been the last 2 weeks. But I think it's going to be Ohio State that pulls this one out. And I think it's big. I think they could possibly cover this game. I think they do cover this game. I think Ohio State's going to come out here and blitzkrieg Michigan State and get back on track. That's something else Ohio State does really well. Whenever they're out of the thick of things, they just start laying the wood on people. So I got Ohio State as well. The next game, 11 o'clock game here. This one could decide who plays in the Big 12 championship game in the next couple of weeks, because you got this weird tie situation that's going to happen with the loser of Oklahoma TCU. They get dropped down, and they're going to be in a three-way tie with either the winner of Oklahoma State, Iowa State, and West Virginia, depending on what West Virginia does today. So depending on who wins this game and wins the Oklahoma game, that's going to determine kind of who has that second spot going forward to the Big 12 championship. So Oklahoma State on the road this morning, 11 a.m. in Ames, Iowa, to take on the Cyclones. Aaron, you got the Cowboys or you got the Cyclones?
Well, Iowa State has really overachieved this year. They've done a lot of good things, and of course, is Oklahoma State at home in this game, or
are
they on the road?
They're in Ames. It's in Ames. Iowa.
Okay, that's what I thought. I couldn't quite remember what I looked at on the sheet, but Iowa State, they play TCU tough, but Oklahoma State, what they showed last week is they can obviously score a lot of points. I think that Oklahoma State just is more talented. I think they're a better team, and I think that's ultimately going to be what what puts them over the top in this game, but this game's going to go. This game's going to be close. I think this game's going to go well into the fourth quarter, but I think Mason Rudolph, with his experience, he's leading the FBS in passing yards. I think Oklahoma State's going to pull this off at the end. I think they're not going to play great defense, but their defense is going to be just good enough. I think they're going to get a couple of turnovers from Iowa State late in the fourth. So give me Oklahoma State in this one.
If Iowa State wants to learn anything from their win over Oklahoma, it's you came back from a 14-point deficit to win that game, but Oklahoma scored 31 points. You've got to be able to limit a really good offense, which Oklahoma State is, and Iowa State did that in the second half of the Oklahoma game. They turned Oklahoma over a couple times. Oklahoma missed a field goal, and then they turned them over in the red zone. And the big question here is, are they going to be able to slow down Oklahoma State's offense, and which is just about as good as Oklahoma? You get them at home. This one's not in Norman. It's not in Stillwater. You get this one in Ames, so I think that adds a little different aspect to it. TCU is a pretty good scoring offense as well, not as good as Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, but Iowa State held them to no points offensively. TCU's only score was a kickoff return, and they beat them 14-7. So Iowa State can play a little bit of defense. Different look here. It's going to be a high-octane offense. They're going to have to continue to score. I don't feel confident in this pick, Aaron. I'm just trying to gain one on you here, so I'm going to go with Iowa State, but they do have a realistic chance to win this football game because they grind it out with the run. They do the K-State thing where they have Kyle Kemp, and they'll even take their linebacker, Joel Lanning, who was Iowa State's quarterback last year. They'll take him and put him behind center and let him take a couple snaps, and they do that thing where they pull that guard and they push that guard right up the middle to give that extra blocker and allow that quarterback running game. And what that does is that eats a lot of clock. They run the clock down, a lot of sustaining drives, and that what that does is that takes the ball out of Mason Rudolph's hands, and that stacked wide receiver core with Aitman and what's his face, the guy who was knocked out of the game last year. You got Justice Hill in the backfield, so you got James Washington. That's who I'm talking about. So you got a lot of talent, a lot of explosiveness for Oklahoma State. I think they can score a bunch, but they're going to have to get the ball first. They're going to have to stop Iowa State themselves. And you saw last week, Oklahoma State, not necessarily, they're a little suspect on defense as well. Was that all Oklahoma's offense, or was that a few holes? So we'll see. Don't feel 100% confident, like I said. I'm going to go with Iowa State. Do they have a chance to win? Yes, they do. Am I picking this mainly just to gain the game back on you? Yes, I am, but I do think they have a chance to take this game. All right, now moving on to the afternoon, the CBS afternoon game, Aaron. I know this is one you're going to be keeping an eye on. Because you are a big Auburn fan. They're actually showing the miracle of Jordan Hare on TV as we speak. Aaron, Georgia, on the road, Jordan Hare Stadium, Auburn Tigers waiting for him. Who wins?
Well, I actually just saw the tip into Ricardo Lewis's hands on TV, making me remember that game. I remember sitting, I was watching that game, basically I was by myself, and because everybody was out of town for some reason. I think Jade was there, but I think that she wasn't in the room at the time. She might have came in late, but I was sitting there, and Auburn had blown that lead in the second half. I was like, oh, I cannot believe they're going to lose this game. They're going to blow this and blow the season, and then that happened, and I just stood up and was running around the room by myself. It was absolutely amazing, and of course, Auburn has not beaten Georgia since that game and that miracle. And you think Auburn's got so much to play for. They got arguably as much to play for as Georgia here. Georgia might have less because they've already clinched the East. Auburn's got might maybe a little bit more. Auburn with no room for error if they want to get back and to be the only two loss team in playoff talk. But they have got to. They've got to play. They've got to find something on offense because Georgia's got a really good defense and. You know, Stidham, he's so good when he sits back there in the pocket when he's got time, and he can make all the throws. But when he gets pressure, that's when he gets a little – he gets happy feet back there, and it's going to be real tough on him with this. Auburn's going to have to play great defense. They have to match the intensity with their defense. They might have to score on defense. It's going to be tough. They're going to have to find some way to run the football. And I wanted to pick Auburn so bad. I want to pick Auburn so bad. But I think one thought, and I've said it already today, but then I remember that Gus Malzahn is Auburn's head coach. And since the 23rd, and since the kick six game, Gus Malzahn has done nothing but disappoint us Auburn fans and nothing but let us down. And for that reason only, I'm picking Georgia. And that's the reason that my team shirt of the week, if you haven't seen it on Twitter, is Georgia Tech. I didn't want to wear an Auburn shirt this week, so I thought, this is the next best shirt to wear when Auburn's playing Georgia. So I got Georgia Tech shirt on, but I'm going with Georgia because they're the better team, and Gus Malzahn has done nothing but disappoint, and I'd love to get proven wrong by Gus, but I just don't see it. I got Georgia in a close one, though. It's going to be close down the stretch, hopefully. But Georgia, they're going to make too many plays. Auburn's defense is going to be on the field too much.
I've been back and forth on this one all day. I thought I had it figured out who I thought was going to win this game, and then I just, at the last second, I changed my mind again. And there's keys all over the field. For Georgia, how does Jake Fromm, a freshman quarterback, come in here and respond to an environment like this? This is not an environment he's seen all year long. And people think back, well, they did go into Notre Dame, and they did take down Notre Dame. Go back and watch that football game. Georgia absolutely neutralized that crowd. That was 100%. I think Georgia may have had more fans there than Notre Dame did. And Notre Dame, as Cole Hublick said earlier, and he's absolutely right, typically not that loud anyway. But Georgia went in there and neutralized it all the way because they went in there and had more fans than the home team. That's not going to be the case. Yeah, all the Georgia fans in the world can go out there if they want to and try to make a difference in this stadium, but you're not going to get in. It's all Auburn right now. They're going to have this place packed, and it's going to be a 2:30 just phenomenon in there, and it's going to be fantastic to see how does Jake Fromm respond. Now, Auburn or Georgia probably does have the better backfield right now with the running back depth there. You got Swift, you got Michelle, you got Chubb. Auburn's supposed to have, you know, the Petway-Johnson duo, but you're really not seeing that right now. It's all Kerryon Johnson.
Petway's been hurt, and even before that, he's been banged up back and forth all season, but I think that they've essentially shut him down for the season at this point. But they're going to hopefully get a little bit more out of Cam Martin today. They're going to have to.
This would be a good one to see him step up in at home, a big game at home. And now, something we talked about all offseason, Aaron, we've talked about some this season, is last year, if Jared Stidham was the quarterback instead of Sean White, they win that Georgia game. Well, now it's time for him to go out there and prove it, because the only offensive touchdown scored in that game was by Auburn. Georgia didn't score an offensive touchdown. Georgia won that game 13-7 off of a Sean White pick six. So you can't turn the ball over if you're Jared Stidham. But you can't be afraid to try to make a play as well. You can't play. When you're going up against a really good defense like this, you're going to have to make that extra effort play to win this one. So a lot of keys there. Auburn needs, Auburn needs Jared Stidham to play his best game so far this season, which he's done the last few weeks. He looked very good against A&M last week on the road, which Auburn's won that game at Kyle Field just about every time they played since they've been in the SEC. I think the road teams won that game every year. But they got to have Jared Stidham step up. And Grumpy, I doubt Grumpy's listening this early, but Grumpy, a big Auburn fan, not a big Jared Stidham fan, I think he's going to get it done for you, man. I think the crowd's going to help as well. I think it's going to come down to who makes the least amount of mistakes. And I'm going to go with the team that doesn't have a true freshman on the road in a hostile environment. I'm going to go with the Auburn Tigers. So, Aaron, I know you hate to hear this, but
you done messed up, A.A. Ron!
I'm going to give you...
You done messed up, A.A. Ron!
Give you another one for the Iowa State game as well. So, I'm going to go with the Auburn Tigers here.
It's one pick that I would not mind losing. That is for sure.
I'm back and forth. I was so confident that Georgia was going to win, but the key to Auburn was Rattle, the freshman. But I was inspired by the miracle of Jordan Hare there. I think Gus Malzahn, late November, can make things happen in Jordan Hare. That's where magic has happened in November before. You've got to kind of dip into that magic again. And I know he's not the best head coach, but let's see if he can get things done. He's got too talented of a team for them not to show up and get ready for this ballgame. They showed up against Clemson. That crowd and Clemson was just a little too much. LSU, they were on the road, and they kind of just, you know, salted away after going up big. And now they were the better team, and they were expected to go in there. They wanted to win. They hadn't won in there in a long time. But after they got up so big, they just kind of – I don't want to say gave up, because it's not really the word I'm looking for.
They came out so flat, and the play calling was awful.
And the lesson to be learned from that is play calling is on the coaches, and the players got to be ready to play. So there's more than just one thing to be learned from that football game. The players aren't the only ones that had a learning experience there. The coaches did as well. So I think Gus Malzahn's going to have them ready. I think it's going to be a close football game. Will I be surprised if Georgia wins this football game? Absolutely not. They're a very talented defense. Their offense isn't too bad either. I just think the true freshman's got to step up on the road. And right now, I've got to see it to believe it. So I'm going with the Tigers. All right, the next game on the schedule, the Big Ten's playoff hopes all in one game. In Madison, Wisconsin, playing host to Iowa, coming off of a drubbing of Ohio State. Aaron, is it the Badgers that continue to keep the Big Ten playoff hopes alive, or do the Iowa Hawkeyes go in there and pull off a second straight upset?
Well, this, of course, is like we said, the only ranked game that Wisconsin's going to play up until the Big Ten championship game, depending on where Michigan is. But where it sits right now, Michigan is unranked. If Iowa was at home, I would, without a hesitation, pick Iowa. But I think that at home, I think this is going to be one of those ugly games. I think Iowa has a good chance to outplay Wisconsin. But I got this gut feeling that Wisconsin is just going to milk this thing, and it's going to be low-scoring, ugly, nasty game that Wisconsin forces a couple of turnovers and gets lucky to get out of here with a win. I've got Wisconsin in a low-scoring game.
I'm not sure what the score is going to be. I haven't thought too much about how ugly that game is. I never really pictured it to be too ugly, but I've got Wisconsin pulling one off at home. Iowa, you're coming off of a big high, and then I know you still have an undefeated team to play right now, Wisconsin. You have another reason to get up and play this game, but Wisconsin's playoff hopes are on the line, and I just think that while they haven't really played anybody, I don't think they're that good. I don't think Iowa's all that great either. I think they caught Ohio State with a couple big blows, and then Ohio State just knew they were beat and kind of gave up for the rest of that game. And I don't mind saying they gave up, because Iowa put it on them, and they continued to put it on them late. And it just didn't look like Ohio State was putting up the effort. So I like Wisconsin at home. I'm going with the Badgers as well, keeping the Big Ten playoff hopes alive for just another week. All right, we're going to get into another one, Aaron, after the break. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll finish up our picks. We're going to start it with Bama on the road at Mississippi State. Does Nick Fitzgerald have a chance? We'll let you know what we think on Tony Mack and the Triplet right here on Sports Radio 730 103.9 The Ump. Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplet. We are just about 30 minutes away from a great week of football, so we'll get you guys set up. We're going to continue. We left you. We were picking our games this week. We're picking all the top 25 games against each other this week. You got Michigan State at Ohio State, if you didn't know. Oklahoma State at Iowa State. Big, big game as far as that second spot for the Big 12 championship goes. That is huge. Because if Iowa State is able to pull off that win over Oklahoma State, and either Oklahoma or TCU loses this game, Iowa State has head-to-head, and they are in that second spot. Now, West Virginia also has head-to-head over Iowa State in a three-way tie, but if TCU loses, TCU has head-to-head over West Virginia. Oklahoma still has an opportunity to beat West Virginia at the end of the year. So it seems if Iowa State wins, they might be comfortably in that second spot. So that's a big game to pay attention to. Georgia at Auburn this afternoon, 2:30 CBS game. But trust me, I know you guys knew that. Can Jared Stidham lead Auburn to a win over the number one team in the country? Can Jake Fromm, true freshman quarterback, go into Jordan-Hare and pull off another great win for Georgia, another really good road win for Georgia this season? And Iowa at Wisconsin, I did forget to mention. Now, me and Aaron both did pick Wisconsin. Something to pay attention in that game. Wisconsin has 7 players out for the season, and the majority of them are starters, starting with their top wide receiver, Quintez Cephas. If you listen to the Tom Abraham Show, I did bring this up the other day. He's out for the season. He will not play in this game. And their other receiver, Jazz Peavy, will not play this game. He's not out for the season, but he will not play today. So that's a big, big thing for Wisconsin. If they're to win, they have to do it without two great wide receivers for their football team. Now, where Aaron and I left it off, we were getting ready to pick Alabama on the road, Mississippi State. Now, Aaron, I think everybody knows by now, Nick Fitzgerald, very important to Mississippi State. He accounts for like 75% of their total touchdowns. So if they're to have success, it's got to start there. Now, they're also a totally different team at home. Do they have the defensive depth to stop Alabama? Will one player be able to take them down essentially, which is really tough to do? all of that is those are great questions. But Mississippi State's at home. It just adds an extra factor of this non-tangible factor of Mississippi State just playing fantastic football at home. Alabama's got a couple linebackers, Sean Dion Hamilton and Mack Wilson, done for the year. Minka's shaken up a little bit. What are the realistic chances Mississippi State goes in here and pulls off a win at home?
Zero. But but I will say this, that at home against Alabama, Mississippi State typically plays better, much better than they do on the road. I do think that Mississippi State will hang around for a half, and by hang around, I mean maybe go down at half 14-3, looking pretty decent. Alabama, I don't think they're going to get completely blown out of the water, but they're going to struggle to move the football, but they're going to play pretty inspired defense being at home. But Alabama's going to win this game. I think it's going to look similar to the LSU game for Alabama, the way they were able to just kind of melt it away. LSU not being able to do much on offense. That's, I think, how I think this is going to look. And for Alabama, what they got to really try to do is not get hurt anymore going into the Auburn game, because they're still probably the most talented defense in the country, but they're missing guys who are key. They can't communicate as much without Sean Dion Hamilton, but they're going to be just fine in this game. But Mississippi State, because they're at home, will hang around. And Alabama typically, like I said, doesn't play as well in Starkville as they do at home against Mississippi State. So Mississippi State hang around 28-10 is something, 28-13. But yeah, the Alabama, nothing to worry about in this game.
Alabama's getting so thin at linebacker, they might actually have to replace a 5-star guy with a 4-star guy. So, you know, obviously sarcasm there. I'm going with Bama also. Now, there are ways that Mississippi State could stay in this game. Obviously, you're going to want Nick Fitzgerald to step up because he is that good for that team. You're going to want him making the majority of the plays. But other guys on the offense, you have to have someone else step up and be able to make a play. Take Bama's eyes off of Fitzgerald for a little bit. Maybe hammer up the middle there. Test those linebackers. Try to do kind of what Iowa State and Kansas State does. Throw an extra blocker down in there up the middle and try to punch the running game up there. Limit the amount of touches the offense gets, because when you're playing Alabama, their defense does such a good job at wearing your defense down. What that means is they take your offense out of the game so quickly, so many three and outs, that your defense has to go out there and play a lot of snaps. Alabama's got a pretty good offense, but it gets magnified as the game goes on and gets better because Alabama's defense wears that offense out, which means your defense has to go out there and play more snaps, and they have to go out there faster. They have to get out there quicker because of all the three and outs Alabama's defense is forcing. So keep the ball out of their hands as much as possible. Hold on to time of possession. Score when you can, obviously. You got to score as much as you can. But a big key here is holding on to the ball. On the defensive side, don't know if they have the defensive depth to slow Alabama down for all four quarters, but can they make something happen at home for a half and try to stay in it? They absolutely can. When it comes to upsetting Alabama, the plan is simple. Jump on them early, get up by a couple scores early, and hold on. Because you go back and watch any of the games they've been upset in the past few years, that's exactly what happens. A team gets up to a big lead, other than Clemson, they get up to a big lead, and they just kind of hold on. All the way back to the Sugar Bowl in 08 with Utah, they jumped up to a 20-point lead. They held on and won. Texas A&M jumped on them really early, held on and won.
Ole Miss did it the two times they didn't. Auburn did not, actually. Auburn got down 21-7 to Alabama in the Iron Bowl in 2013, scored a late touchdown at the end of the half, and then they doubled down and scored on their first opening drive of the second half to tie it up at 21. But yeah, you're right. That's typically the plan. Get up and hold on.
So big key is just try to find a way to get up. And you're at home, so you have the possibility. Alabama's the better football team. They're the better football team, but you've got a really good playmaker on offense, to get things done. So there are ways to do this. Don't think it's going to happen, but there certainly are ways they can make it happen. Alabama takes that one for both of us, I think. Now, Notre Dame at Miami. This one's extremely, extremely important to the playoff picture. Now, you got Miami, who's forced a lot of turnovers this year. I think they forced 20 total turnovers. 13 of them have been interceptions. They love playing for that gold turnover chain. It looks like just a big golden rope you get to throw around your neck. It's one of those gaudy things that players get to play for. I don't mind the chain that bad. The ones I dislike the presentation of the turnover trash can from Tennessee, and I just don't like Georgia's pads. I think they're ugly. They're gross. But the chain I don't dislike so much. I think it's got a little bit of swagger to it. It fits the University of Miami to a T. I mean, Miami, you think about when they've had their good runs. They've had nothing but swagger when they have those good runs. So if you're going to try to make another run, you gotta create that swagger as well. So that's why I do dig the chain. But Aaron,
I would argue that Tennessee's trash can fits more to a T than Miami's chain.
Well, that's fair. And the presentation of the trash can is what makes it bad. Like, you're just holding it up like, yeah, obviously you're proud of, like, they're proud of their turnover pads, and the Miami's proud of their chain, but you're holding up a trash can like it's some big prize. Like, we get it. If you turn over the ball, go throw it in the trash can, but don't hold it up like it's some prize cow. You know what I mean? My goodness. But okay, so you got Notre Dame coming into Miami. First time Miami's had a big game day game since I think 2001, and you remember that football team. But Miami forces a lot of turnovers. Don't necessarily score too many points. Notre Dame doesn't have such a bad defense either. They don't give up many points per game, just like Miami. But the problem is, Notre Dame's got a good defense going up against a suspect offense on the road. Offenses, when you're at home in a big game, they might step up a little bit. So I expect Miami to have a couple big burst plays here and there to look a little better than normal this season. But on the other side, Miami, it's Miami's good defense going up against Notre Dame's great offense. Notre Dame scores a lot of points. They have 41 points a game. They average almost 500 yards a game. Something's got to give here, Aaron. Does Miami hold serve at home, or does Notre Dame pick up their first really good win of the season? I know they beat, they have a great loss. They smacked USC. All their Pac-12 win doesn't look very good anymore. Do they finally get a really good win?
Well, Notre Dame, if they lose this game, their season's done. If they lose, they're done. But if they win, they should be into the playoff, because this is their last big game. Because, yeah, they've got the last two games are pretty easy. I mean, they've got Stanford, but Stanford, of course, did put off the big upset against Washington, so that's going to be tough for them. But they should win that game. There's not going to be a game that they're not favored to win by probably about a touchdown. So this is huge for them. And Miami, of course, got the big win against Virginia Tech. And before that, though, they'd been starting slow. They'd been kind of playing kind of sleepwalky kind of games. And then they jumped on Virginia Tech and played a really good game last week. This game's going to be one of those classic ABC night games, I think. I think it's going to be really good, down to the wire. If any of you remember Florida State Notre Dame from about 3 years ago with the offensive pass interference down there at the goal line, that game was fantastic.
Everett Golson.
It was Everett Golson, and then all Notre Dame did after that was lose just about every other game they played after starting 5-6-0. But
who you got?
It's tough. It is a tough game.
You got the history in there, but this is taking place tonight, 2017. Well, who wins it?
I'm taking Notre Dame in a late game, but here's my reasoning. Simply because I think Notre Dame is the better team. I think they've been better this season, and they've looked better in all their games. They've been blowing teams out. They haven't been really winning any ugly games where they haven't looked great to this point, and Miami has. So I think that's where Notre Dame looks a little better. They've played, of course, they beat around USC. But I think this game's going to go down to the wire. I think it's going to be close, back and forth. But I think Brandon Wimbush making plays with his legs, because he's a very good runner. I think he makes some plays down the stretch with his feet, leads a last-minute drive, and I think that Notre Dame gets a big win here and makes one step closer to the college football playoff. But for Miami, if they lose, their season's not done, because they can still win out and win the ACC and maybe try to squeeze back in there at four. But they're going to need this resume win tonight.
If they were to lose tonight and then beat Clemson, they'd have a good argument for it, because that's a good Clemson team. And that's a good Notre Dame team that they would have lost to. So they would have a good loss and a good win, a couple good wins over Virginia Tech. Wasn't a bad win either. But Aaron, I'm with you. I'm going Notre Dame here. I like their quarterback play. I think their quarterback play is better. Miami's got Malik Rozier, who's been okay. He hasn't been great. Brandon Wimbush has made some pretty impressive plays this season. He can do it with his legs. He's got a better arm than I would think he does. But it's pretty impressive to go out there and watch him play. And that there's a reason they're averaging 40 points a game and almost 500 yards, and it starts there. Also, I think Notre Dame is basically playing a crowd here. I think they're the better team I think they have to withstand Miami's early rush, I guess, early run, I should say. Anytime I think run, I just think basketball. But they got to withstand an early run by Miami here. Other than that, if their defense gets settled rather early, Notre Dame could pull away big in this game. I think Notre Dame's just the better all-around team. They've got the better offense. Defenses might hold serve with each other. And like I said, Miami's offense could step up a little more because it's a big game at home. You never know who's going to step up when you got a big game like that. The talent does tend to show up in big games, especially when you're at home. So you got to withstand that as well. But I'm going with Notre Dame. I think they have a chance to pull away big here. And Notre Dame's getting a lot of love in this game. So you still got to show up. Just because people are picking you to win doesn't mean you're going to go out there and win. You still got to show up and do it. But I'm going with that one. And finally, the 7 o'clock box game. TCU, Gus Johnson calling TCU on the road in Norman, Oklahoma, to take on the Sooners. Basically an elimination game for the loser out of the playoffs. But the loser of this game potentially could battle back, win second place in the Big 12, and come and spoil the other playoff hope in the Big 12. So, Aaron, potentially listed as part one, because there is a possibility they rematch in a few weeks, does TCU, with a good defense, go on the road and stop the best offense and best quarterback in the country in Baker Mayfield?
I think TCU is going to be the best defense that Ohio State has played to date, with the exception of probably Ohio State. Even though Ohio State gave up 55 points last week, I think that TCU's definitely got the most talented defense in the Big 12. And I know that's not saying much with some of the bad defense, but the Big 12 can definitely play offense too. So I think that probably has something to do with it as well. I think TCU can be a little anemic on offense, and I think that's going to be exploited in this game because I think they're going to have to keep serve with Oklahoma, especially on the road. But I think Baker Mayfield just puts another stamp on his resume on his way to a Heisman Trophy. I think he leads this team to another big win. I think TCU hangs – I mean, I think it's going to be a good game. I think TCU is going to stay in there. But I think Mayfield just makes too many plays down the stretch. Going to be similar, but not near as high scoring as last week. It is going to go back and forth until towards the end. But I think Oklahoma will pull away with just a few minutes left. So I like the Sooners at home.
Well, I think play style has a lot to do with it not being as high scoring as last week. TCU, everybody wants to look at the Oklahoma-Oklahoma State game and say Oklahoma's defense is not good. They gave up 52 points. Baker Mayfield will have to score every possession just to beat TCU. That's not necessarily true. You go watch TCU play. They don't run high-octane offense in high tempo like Oklahoma State does. They're more – I wouldn't say they're just like them, but they do more so of Kansas State and Iowa State. They like to run the ball more. They like to hold on to the ball a little more. Do they have the personnel to be able to run up to the line and do all that? Quarterback, maybe. Kenny Hill does like to throw it, and he does like to take chances, but – as far as your running back and your receivers go, absolutely not. Oklahoma State has the deepest wide receiver core in the country. Justice Hill, a returning 1,000-yard back, had 200-plus rushing yards on Oklahoma last week. That's your big concern. He's a good back, but that's your big concern. Oklahoma's secondary has been suspect for years. The problem is their running defense has been very good the last couple of years. It's been a little underrated. It's not great, but it's always been pretty good and got the job done. They have Obo Okoronkwo, the best pass rusher in the Big 12. He leads the Big 12 in sacks. He's got to get pressure. They've got to stop the run one, and he's got to be able to get pressure, and he does so at home. Now, I know Tom Abraham brought this up the other day, and I didn't get a chance to rebuttal back, but I said that they have Obo Okoronkwo. I'm going to defend myself now, the Big 12 sacks leader. And Tom said, yeah, he's going to get some because when a team throws for 30 or 45 times a game on you, he's going to get opportunities. Well, I'm going to call BS on that because Oklahoma, Obo Okoronkwo, I think, has 8 or 9 sacks this year. And teams are averaging 32 passing attempts per game on Oklahoma. Okay, well, guess what? Oklahoma averages 2 sacks a game. That's 32 passing attempts per game. Alabama averages 3 sacks a game, and teams average 31 pass attempts on them per game. So you're saying that. So if you're saying that for Oklahoma, you got to be saying that for Alabama too. And obviously, Oklahoma doesn't have that much talent on the defensive side of the ball that Alabama does. But Ober Okoronkwo is absolutely an NFL pass rusher, and you can look up anybody's mock draft or anybody's analysis on him and see that he individually is that good. It doesn't matter how many times people are passing on him a game. So he's got to make a difference in this one. He's got to get back there, and I think he can. It's a little lower scoring. TCU does have a good defense, but if I'm Oklahoma, I'm looking at the Oklahoma State film that TCU played, because TCU turned them over four times, but Oklahoma State still scored 31 points. I don't think Oklahoma's going to turn the ball over that many times. You know why? Because Mason Rudolph threw four interceptions in that game. Baker Mayfield doesn't throw that many interceptions in one football game. He's never thrown more than two, and it's rare that he does that. He did that last week. He's going to make the adjustments. He's a gamer. He's a competitor. It's a big one. This one's at home. So I think they go out there maybe with a little more tempo. And they've got playmakers all over the field. They've got a deeper backfield than Oklahoma State does, and they've got pretty good receivers as well. They've got fast receivers that are going to test that secondary. So with all that taken into account, I'm going with the Sooners. I think TCU's defense comes out and makes a statement early and stops Oklahoma. Oklahoma's been very good on their first drives of the game. But then it's Oklahoma's turn to turn around and make their defensive presence known. And I think they're going to be able to do that for a couple quarters. The only game that they've looked just helpless in was the Oklahoma State game. And the Kansas State game, but they made adjustments in all those games except the Oklahoma State game. They still were able to turn Oklahoma State over. So I'm going with the Sooners. I think TCU, the better defense. Oklahoma's the better team with the better quarterback and playmakers all over the field. Gary Patterson, you can talk about how good of a coach he is all you want to. The point is, it's offense versus defense when it comes down to it. And guess what? The last few years, Lincoln Riley may not be the head coach, but he's still been the offensive coordinator, and he's been able to take down Gary Patterson's defense anyway. So I'm going with Oklahoma. Aaron, we finished our picks now. We got to break this thing down. When we come back, we're going to talk a little Heisman Trophy, because I know Baker Mayfield is potentially the front runner. He is the front runner right now. Who are the other guys behind him right now? Where is Saquon Barkley now? Where is Bryce Love? We'll talk about that right after the break and set you up for these 11 o'clock football games. That's all right here on Tony Mack and the Triplett, Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump.
Welcome back. Tony Mack in the Triplett, just about 12 minutes before your Sack Up Saturday gets started. You got to grow a pair to play in these games today, because they are the biggest of the big ones. It's a good thing we have them, because next week the games are probably going to suck. So we got this one to hold us over for until conference championships. We're going to go to the phones real quick, because Aaron and I talked a little bit about Mississippi State and Alabama earlier. We got Gary on the line that wants to talk a little more about it. Gary, go ahead.
Next week's game's not going to suck. At 8 a.m., Alabama and Mercer start coverage. Hey, what's up, guys? It's Arky.
Arky, what's up, man?
Yeah, don't undersell that station. Come on, bro.
Hey, all right, look, Alabama's going to play Mercer, and you're going to get the Alabama fans to listen to the game. But you can't, even the Alabama fans aren't expecting a good one. They're expecting a win, which I guess is okay.
Okay, I just want to be honest here. Let me just try to be honest. Roll Tide. That's all.
What's up,
hey,
man?
I'm at the Veterans Day Parade, by the way. I just wanted to mention in downtown Huntsville. So people are down here listening on our app, which, of course, is for free. Just search for UMP app, the UMP app, W-U-M-P, however you want to find it in your app store. If you see the UMP truck, which apparently is going to be fairly early, even though I technically wasn't on the list when I showed up, I was able to sneak my way into WZYP spot. Shade throw on them since they are bailing out today. Take a picture, share it with us on the social media. I'd like to see that you saw the UMP truck out there. It's the UMP truck's first parade. I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, that is exciting. I drove in that parade last year for ZYP, so I'm kind of bummed that they're not going to make it as well. But at least you got a spot. So how's the crowd looking out there? Is it pretty good for this early in the morning?
Hard to tell. Mainly because I'm still in the parking lot where everybody is at. The parade doesn't start for till 11:11, which makes sense. I'm looking at a whole bunch of young servicemen and women in JROTC, people who are right in front of me. So I'm looking forward to that. Seeing a couple competitor radio stations. Hey, you suck, Mix. So, yeah. That's all. I just want to say hi. Doing a good job today, guys. Been listening in. Keep it going. Don't say nice things ever again about Georgia Tech, though.
Argie, while I have you, maybe you can give me a little more insight. I went down at the beginning of the show and I ran down 4A Region 7 being swept out of the playoffs, unfortunately. Can you give me a little more of an update outside of 4A and give some of these guys that are just waking up an update of what happened in high school football last night? Have you had a chance to at least look at it? I know it was a late night.
Much up to date. I know Bob Jones lost a heartbreaker to Mountain Brook last night. That was a really close and hard-fought game between those two. I mean, I know some like Hewitt Trussville scores, which is in Bob Jones's region. They will beat Spain Park. They're going to take on Hoover next week, who beat Sparkman last night. I mean, let's just say congratulations again to LaRon White for getting Sparkman back to the playoffs in his first year there, because that is a huge coup for a team that's been struggling so far for over a decade to get back into the playoffs, to actually even get there. They weren't ready for Hoover, but to get back into the playoffs in year one is a great job by him. Tells you what kind of coach he is, coming from Tanner and taking them consistently to where they have been. But yeah, it's a decent night overall for North Alabama. Just a bad night for Region 7. All of them could beat by Region 5.
Yeah,
and, most of them weren't even close, except for I think one of them. I think that was the Madison Academy Hoax Bluff game.
Well, I was just going to say Guntersville blew a 21-point halftime lead to St. Clair County and got beat 28-21.
That's not good. Yeah, that's not good. St. Clair County is not that good. So that's heartbreaking for them. But, you know, teams like that, I think they won on Thursday. I think Lee Huntsville won on Thursday. I think they beat Hayden. And then Mae Jemison, I think, beat Corner on Thursday as well. Very big. So some success for the North Alabama teams, just not the ones that we're used to covering on Friday night.
Now, one more thing. There's one more big game going down in Alabama today, and that is this afternoon on CBS at Jordan-Hare Stadium. What are your thoughts on that game, Argie?
Well, it's Jordan-Hare Stadium. That's my first thought on the game. Secondly, I think Auburn's got everything going for it except for its head coach, and that's the only thing that bothers me about this game. I think Auburn's got the talent to be able to win it. I think it's got the explosive capabilities to win it. I think it's got the efficient defense that it needs to win this game. I just don't know yet. And they could have learned their lessons and mistakes from the LSU game as far as when to take the foot off the gas, because I could see Auburn going up 14-0 in this game and then slowly letting that thing melt away. So I would like to hope for Auburn fans' sake that game has turned, that Auburn has learned from their mistakes, but I've yet to be convinced, because their competition since LSU has been relatively lackluster, including A&M.
Archie Shea, the program director of this glorious station of the UMP. Archie, go represent us well at the Veterans Day Parade.
And SEC Network analyst.
Thank you very much, Archie Shea, with us. Really appreciate him calling in. I had a good time calling the game with him last night. It was a lot of fun. Road trip 2.5 hours away to Jacksonville. The game didn't go the way we wanted, but it was a good time. If you ever get a chance to hang out or talk to Archie, he's just one of the funniest guys you'll ever talk to. He's just a goofy guy that enjoys any moment he's around. He just loves to crack a joke about anything, because, you know, why not? So, Aaron, I know you haven't really been able to hang around Archie too much, but he's a goofy guy, and he's actually, I know he said Roll Tide, he's actually an Auburn fan, I believe, so he does like to crack the Roll Tide quite often.
And you said, I was like, who's calling in? You're like, Gary wants to talk about Alabama. I was like, okay, Gary. And he got on, and I was like, this voice sounds so familiar. And then he was like, it's Archie. And I was like, no wonder it sounded familiar. I recognize his voice. But, yeah, nice to hear from the guys, because what was it, 2 weeks ago, before we went on our hiatus, we had Tom Abraham call in on his way down to Tuscaloosa, so that was cool, too.
Absolutely, yeah, Tom was kind of hiding under the radar this week. He didn't want to get caught by CBS and get told to do a game. He actually called the Birmingham Bulls game against the Huntsville Havoc last night, and he's so excited about all the football today that he wanted to make sure he was at home for that. So he was just kind of hoping that he never got that call or email, which I believe he didn't. So he's going to be at home watching these games. So by the off chance, Big Dog, if you are at home listening, hi, we love you. We appreciate you calling in a couple weeks ago. We really appreciate Archie Shea calling in as well, as a good friend of mine. So, Aaron, we don't have much time at all. You don't have any time to say it. You just need to say your top two Heisman finalists. Give them to me.
I mean, I think Mayfield's going to run away with it. My number two right now is Bryce Love. I just think he's had statistically such a great season. Went for 166 last night. He can make a statement against Notre Dame, but I think it's Mayfield's to lose at this point.
I think so, too. Mayfield's got another chance to do it against a really good defense in TCU and has a chance to do it again at the end of the season, potentially even in a revenge game against Iowa State. Bryce Love second, 3 total touchdowns as well to go along in that win over Washington last night. That's going to do it, guys. Go enjoy this wonderful Saturday of football. We have been, for myself, it's Tony Mack, Aaron Triplett on the other side. This has been Tony Mack and the Triplett. Enjoy your Saturday. See you next week. We'll